It's felt like what the equivalent of what I would guess finals week feels like, because it's just been like everything has happened in 1 week, and I'm just like trying to not drown. It was 7 a.m. to midnight both days, and 30 hours of recording right after the crazy music video shoots.
Welcome to Made for Music, brought to you by Stitch Records. I am your host, Duncan Byerjean. This podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive picture of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is, and sign up for the newsletter at madeformusicpodcast.com to be the first to hear about all the latest updates and insights into the ever-evolving music business. As I mentioned, this podcast is brought to you by Stitch Records. Many of you know Cross Stitch, aka Aaron Karstensen, the founder of Stitch Records. He's produced and mixed every song I've released as DB Stewart. He has a background in sound design for Berklee College of Music, and there's no one else I would trust more to deliver the best sounding mixes than him. The fastest way to get a hold of him is on Instagram under the handle at X, the letter, Stitch Music, all one word. But without further ado, we've got an amazing guest for you today, so hang on tight for the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast truly has the most wild journey we've been able to highlight to date. Her story is one of grit, perseverance, and unbridled creativity, as jaw-dropping and heart-wrenching as it is inspiring. She started classical piano training at just 5 years old, opera at 9, and went on to win number one soprano in the state of Texas for all-state choir. At just 16 years old, left high school, moved to Nashville to begin writing and developing herself as an artist. I'm talking the full gamut as well. Not only is she a brilliant vocalist and songwriter, she's a truly multifaceted creator, directing music videos, knitting, designing clothes, painting, and more. So without further ado, please welcome, fresh off the release of her debut album, Le Petit Mort, the epitome of tenacity and artistry, founder of the Purple Cult, and plane crash survivor, Anastasia Elliott.
Damn, I need to take you everywhere with me.
That's really what the podcast is a front for, is to just get people to bring me along as their announcer.
Yeah, you need to do that anytime I walk into a room.
Hey, if you need, I can pre-record some of these. Just tell me what the event is and we can like roll them out.
Any meetings or any pitches I'm doing, I
yeah. They don't take my word for it.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, it's truly my pleasure, and especially amid the craziness. I know it's album rollout time, and as we were chatting about earlier, a million other things, which I'm excited to get to. There's so much, I guess, history that goes into this project, but I'd love to jump back to the beginning before we dive on in, which is just starting with, what role did music play in your life growing up?
I grew up around a lot of music, but not necessarily like conventional music, I guess, to most people. My grandfather was the chairman of the opera and very instrumental in saving the ballet and all the arts in Houston, the ballet, the symphony, and the opera. So I grew up around a lot of these very theatrical and more classical styles of art. And definitely, like when I was really little, I wasn't the biggest fan because it always meant that I had to wear tights and I really hated wearing tights, but grew to really love it. And I've just always been really inspired to this day by those art forms, I think more than any other. My dad always had 80s music playing in the house, from Kate Bush and Taylor Dane and Pat Benatar and like all these really amazing, powerful female vocalists that he loved. And that definitely, I think, shaped my opinion on what a female vocalist could and should be. That's very opposite of most modern music right now.
That's interesting, because you had that exposure to classical and then kind of the grittier side of like those like rock and roll artists and stuff like that. So what did that look like? Because you start classical training very young as well, and obviously having these like family ties into the arts. How much of that was your family bringing you into what they were already doing, and how much was you being like, I want in?
I mean, with piano, I always have been drawn to music, and so I think with piano, my mom like played piano as a kid, and I think we had a beautiful upright that is now in my studio, and it
Nice.
was just kind of like starting piano lessons as a kid, and I just really fell in love with it. And opera came into play when I was gonna audition for the 8th grade, whatever musical I was wanting to audition for, and my piano teacher also taught voice, and so I had her help me with the audition, and she was like, I don't usually start lessons this young, but like you have a voice, and like if we start training it now, you're just going to be set up for more success. And so she was a real like old school classical teacher. Like if I came with my nails not cut down to the bone, like she was going to take me in the kitchen and cut them off. And
Oh, wow.
she was a very harsh classical teacher, and I was with her for a very long time. And then I just loved classical music. It's still like my happy place. Like if I'm singing in the shower, it's opera. It's not like anything modern or rock. Like it's opera. And so it's just, yeah, it just really stole my heart. But classical music didn't really gel with I think like artistic and weird and wild side. And so it was like I gained the skill from that stuff. But then as I got to the point where it was like starting to look at if I was going to go to college or if I was going to do music school. And I went to Boston Conservatory for 2 months between 8th grade year and freshman year of high school. And I got in on a jazz song, but then they were like, you can either do opera or musical theater. And I hate musical theater. So I was like, opera 1000%. But I was in a place where I like wanted to take opera and make it something new. And like the classical world of like, you know, there's like one right way to do this piece, or there's one right way to sing this, and like there's no changing that. Like I just didn't really feel passionate or called to pursue anything related to music school. So I then moved to Nashville and was like, well, I'm going to take opera and classical stuff and try to modernize it. But I think kind of the mixture of that with the more artistic, gritty artists like Freddie Mercury and David Bowie and Pat Benatar, and like, I mean, I think you can definitely see in my work, especially the new stuff we're recording, it's really the marriage of those two worlds.
That's so awesome. And that's a huge decision at like 16 to make. Do you mind walking me through that a little bit? Because I just think back at like 16, I was just like worried about baseball practice like after school. So I just can't imagine being like, you know what? It's time to make this big move here.
I always knew that this was what I wanted to be. Like from the time I was a kid, there's no other option ever in my head. And I never really fit in school. Like I was kind of always the weird outsider that like wore my headphones and high heels to school and just like didn't really, I don't know, I just didn't gel with anybody. And so I don't think I was very preoccupied with a lot of the stuff that most people are in school. And I spent most of my junior year traveling and writing in LA, Nashville, and New York, and was developed by this awesome guy who was head of A&R for Beyonce's company. And so he was like taking me around, showing me the ropes, and I wound up coming to Nashville, I guess, that summer, and worked with this producer that I just really gelled with. Like he understood what I was trying to make, and I stayed here for like a month to work with him, and then I just never went home. So it wasn't like a conscious decision of like, oh, I'm moving to Nashville. It was just like I came here, I lived in a corporate apartment for a month, and then I lived there for a year, and I just didn't go home. So it just was kind of following what was going on and leaning into what felt right. And my parents were very awesome and generous to allow it and encourage
Yeah, that's got to feel so good because I know so many people's folks look at the arts and go, "Ooh, don't dive in." But they were like, "Yeah, she's got it. 16, no worries." Like,
it. Yeah.
so are they pretty thrilled to see this album finally rolling out after all this time?
Definitely. My mom works with me a lot. She makes a lot of my costumes and
Oh, no way.
sets, and yeah, we build a lot of what you see in the videos together. And my dad is just the best, most awesome supporter. He builds sometimes when we really need some problem solving, or if we need him to calculate like how much of a material we need, he's the guy to do it. But yeah, they're fantastic. I actually live with them now. I had moved here and was here for 8 years, and then they followed me here from Houston and got this great house, and I moved into the basement and we built a little like photo video studio that we shoot a lot of our stuff in. So it's just been kind of awesome how it's all worked out.
Yeah, it's like a whole family endeavor. That's super cool.
It's absolutely like our family, weird family business. Nice. The neighbors are very bizarre. Like there's always some kind of weird props coming in and out of this house.
That seems like a whole set piece out of his own, of just the view from the neighbors seeing what goes in and out. Imagine the popcorn machine.
Yeah, with all the mannequins in the front yard. My mom was like, I would love to know what they think is happening tonight. Like the mannequins that had like, what are they called? The airplane, like safety masks, the oxygen masks. Uh-huh. All the mannequins had them on. And then my mom was like, they must think we're just, or not have a clue what we're doing over here.
Oh my gosh. Have they ever brought anything up, or they're just like, we're going to let them do their thing?
Well, when we first moved in here and like all the props and my crazy piano and like all that stuff was like kind of being moved in, they like one neighbor every day would like deliver a nothing bundt cake and like I think try to just like figure out what was going on. And it's been really funny. They kind of like made friends with my mom for a little bit and were definitely just really curious.
Yeah. You're like, all right, we're 12 so. Bundt cakes in. In a week, like yes. You can ask.
It really seriously was that. It was like comical the amount of bundt cakes we received that week, God. All from the same.
It's the neighborhood meetings. They're just like, all right, you got to go back until we have a straight answer.
Yep.
Oh yep. My gosh, that's awesome. So it's like a full blown production house, at least as far as the videos is concerned.
Yeah.
My mind's going a million different directions because there's so much cool stuff we could dive into. So I guess I'd love to hear about the development side because I know that leads kind of into the now.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely worked with a lot of really interesting people at the beginning that kind of set me up with, like interesting opportunities. I found with writing and like trying to figure out what my sound was and like learning how to write music, I found like that Nashville out of the three cities I was traveling to a lot fit the most with me because the songwriters here, I mean, I was writing with like country songwriters. There wasn't a lot of music here other than country at the time, but I loved the country writers more than the pop writers because they were so much more focused on storytelling and they would rather spend a week writing a great song than like the pop writers. It's more like how many songs can we get today? And it was a lot more manufactured. And I really felt like I learned how to write a great story from the Nashville writers. And also because I'm way more music melody heavy as a songwriter, pairing myself with the people who were amazing with storytelling that like didn't need to help me with the melodies or music. It felt like I kind of found like my perfect counterbalance and the people that I could learn from for what I was doing. So, I mean, I wound up writing 200 songs for album one. And you can definitely hear listening to the demos, like how, you know, we were finding the sound as we kept going. And I always knew though, generally the sonic direction I wanted to go, because I'm not really the type of person when I'm making music or videos where I'm like, these are my references and this is what I'm trying to sound like. Like it's a lot more like feeling sound, and yeah, it's really hard to describe my creativity process because I just don't look outside for inspiration. Like for me it's like I want a piano that like feels like this, and then that inspires the next idea, and it just kind of like keeps building and I kind of go down a rabbit hole. So for me, development was really about finding the people that thought in similar ways to me, could understand like, I want this track to sound and feel more Red, or like, I want this synth to feel like this. And like, you know, I could speak in a more visual way and they would understand me. And just building that creative team with like each element of this, it's really about the people you work with more than anything. Like just finding people that support the way that you create.
For sure.
Because nine sessions out of 10, 9 people out of 10 that I work with, like, are not a good fit for me.
That makes sense. And especially because I feel like so many people, when they walk into a session to try and connect, it's here's what my references would be so we can quickly get to a middle point. So that makes a lot of sense. You're like, no, that's not your natural approach. And it's so interesting you talk about a sound feeling a certain way or color is that comes through. Everything seems very intertwined top to bottom, which makes sense if you got like the production house, which is cool. So I guess when you're writing those songs, are you already thinking, oh my gosh, here's the visuals I would do, or is it focus on the song first and then later we'll get to what this looks like, or is that all kind of intertwined for you?
It's definitely intertwined, and that's why the project became so visual. I just think and create very visually, so a lot of the times before I even have written the lyrics or know what a song is going to be about, I have a video first or like a visual first. Like my typical process with writing is I'll have like a track that I'm building. Like I don't really like to write on acoustic instruments, like just piano or guitar. Like sometimes it's happening. Like it happens a little bit more now than it used to, but like that doesn't inspire me. I'll write a pretty just like, it'll just be like a song, but it won't be like a song. Right. So I like to write like a track and build feeling and sound and like give it a personality first. And then I'll know what's ready for melody writing when the melody just kind of like comes to me. And usually it's the first melody that I sing or like a slight variation on that sticks. And then usually then visuals come to me. So it'll be like these sounds, like I see this and I see this and I see this. And I think it's because I'm not really like a word person. My flow just isn't really in words. So like when I can just like visualize what would the character be like, that's like I don't go to into sessions and be like, oh, I want to write a song about this, or like this happened in my life, so I want to write a song. It's all sound first, and then I'm like, okay, who's the character here, what are they trying to say, and then I find out later that I was really writing about something in my life, but it's not really like a conscious, I just broke up with this person, so I'm gonna write a breakup song. It's more like I'm writing something that feels like painful and like passionate, and so like what words are gonna like best get across what I'm trying to say. So it's very backwards for me than I think a lot of people, and it's not necessarily even that the video idea that I come up with in the writing session is gonna be the actual video idea, because usually like things change and then later I'll sit with the video and I mean the song and come up with the actual music video treatment. But that is how I get to creating music. And I think that shows in the music. Like it more feels like I'm scoring something that's in my head, and production's that way too. Like that's why I don't work well with a lot of producers. It feels more like scoring a visual to me than it does just being like, oh, that synth's really cool, we should use that. Like everything has like a lot of intention and putting a lot of ear candy in it, that kind of builds a real like multi-sensory experience. I'm psycho.
It's not where I thought that was going. No, that's...
I talk about it, I'm like, God damn. Like,
well, there's a method. I think that's important though, because it is what's helping you really carve out what's you, as opposed to, yeah, here's the synth that's really cool that we've been using in XYZ songs. If that's not the starting point, then from the get-go you're able to differentiate, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
As this project, you mentioned 200 songs. So I'm really curious, A, how you whittle down to 13, because that's a lot. And how, with this process that you just outlined, how long was that process? I mean, 200, to get to 13 is just tough in general.
Yeah, so I guess I started writing for this in like, I think my first demos were from 2011. And that was like the beginning of my writing journey. So I recorded this album in 2015.
Oh, wow.
So that was the period of time that I was writing. So it was years of just becoming a better and better writer. But in 2013 is when my plane crash happened. And I had written Crash Landing 3 months before the plane crash.
Oh.
So I had written this song, Crash Landing, and I didn't really know what it was about. It was just, I wrote that chromatic chord progression and I don't know, just wrote this song, Crash Landing, and I was like, it's kind of weird. I don't really know 100% what it's about, but it's cool. And then 3 months later, I was in a plane crash, and all the headlines were Crash Landing. And so I'm like, I manifested that shit. I was working on the lyrics on the plane, and I was going to finish recording the demo in New York. I was on my way to do that.
Wow.
And so that experience changed my life in a million ways. Awesome. In that track, actually, in the bridge, is the radio control tower talk from my actual plane crash and sounds that I pulled from different footage and stuff that people had taken in the crash. Like some of the like rises and stuff that go into choruses are the sounds of the engines and stuff from the random videos of people recording the plane crash. So once that happened, the songs I began writing after it were very, I think, like processing a lot of the trauma that I was going through, and wrote, you know, a bunch more songs from 2013 to 2015. And then when it was time to put my record together, I had a awesome label deal at that point. So I had got myself a deal with the president of Warner Brothers, and he was kind of like, I want you to make the most Anastasia record you can possibly make. Like, I don't want anyone to tell you what songs you're going to put on there. Like, A&R your own project. Like, here's your budget. Just turn in the most you album you can possibly make. So I had like a very unconventional, awesome label deal.
Yeah. And especially for a major. That's huge.
He saw the vision. And when I was picking songs, I kind of did this thing where I sent out my like narrowed down probably 30 to 40 songs. And the songs that I told everyone to pick their like top 10 songs. And the songs that were on everybody's list were like automatic yeses that made up like half of the track list. And then the last half were just songs that I felt needed to be on there for a certain reason. And so it was kind of a mixture of being like, these are the songs that are really connecting with people or that people find really catchy. And then, you know, these are the songs that really round out the story. And that was kind of our process for picking songs. And then they all just fit so perfectly. Like when I started working on the track list and I was like, this is the story and this is how it flows. And then making the interlude and, you know, all the pieces that are in there. That was kind of the process for that.
You said you like manifested that instance, because after the fact you mentioned it's kind of going through that healing process. So what did that look like for you, I guess, in recording? Did you find it cathartic? Like, obviously it's a hugely traumatic experience that very few people can actually attest to. So what did collaborating look like in that setting? And did that make, I guess, more difficult to collaborate with folks, being that, yeah, no one in the room is going to have that shared experience?
I think I was so young when it happened, and I definitely come from a family and kind of culture that is not very emotionally in touch or emotionally intelligent. And I think that's why words are not really my strength. And so I don't think I had access to a lot of the feelings that I was going through if you had just asked me about them. And so I think when that crash happened, I was so, like, I didn't have kind of the knowledge or faculties to be able to even just like know how I was feeling. Like, I would know I was getting like tunnel vision anxiety attacks, but I wouldn't tell anyone. I would just like go to the bathroom and like ride it out, because I just didn't even know what was going on. And that's what, like, my family is not this way anymore. Like, we've come a long way since then. But I mean, at that point, literally they picked me up from the airport, and like the next day, like the solution was, oh, let's take her shopping and like, you know, distract from what this was. And there was never like, are you okay? Like, how are you feeling? Like that wasn't coming to me from anyone in my life. And so I was in this place where I, like, this huge catastrophic thing happened to me. I was 18 years old and had no clue what the hell to do with myself. And so I became like obsessed with healing and trying to fix it, because I'm a huge fixer. And I went to like every type of healing modality you can possibly imagine, from hypnosis to, you know, mediums to like everything, therapists, like everything. And I became like very obsessed with mental health and understanding myself. And, but it still took like years, I think, of, I mean, to this day, like still understanding how to communicate feelings in different ways. So I think since I didn't have the words to do that, for me, it happened in creating like the sonic landscapes and just writing kind of from that flow state. And I think even though this album has taken 13 years to make and come out, if I had put it out earlier and kind of in the midst of all that, all that was going on, I don't think I would have been able to talk about it in an eloquent way. Like I was creating stuff, but I didn't always know like why I was creating it. But now from like a more healed and emotionally intelligent place, I can look back on it and say, I made this song because of this. This is what I was talking about. Like, I think the delay was the best possible service that could have happened to such an ambitious project, because I was just very like, it felt like being in the eye of the hurricane and just kind of like creating what I was feeling, but I couldn't really like tell you. So collaboration wasn't hard because I was just so in the midst of it. And I think the way I create never really makes collaboration hard if I'm with the right people. But again, it wasn't like I was coming into the session being like, I feel really upset about this thing, so let's write about it. It was more like, I'm going to play these like minor chords and like, this is the feeling I'm trying to like express. So yeah, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting you mentioned kind of that gap enabling you to talk about it, because a lot also happened, I guess, on the business side then. So you mentioned, obviously, you're developing this project. It's, hey, make the most Anastasia project you can. But then there's kind of like the regime switch up. So I guess, what stage were you at when that happened? Because you mentioned a lot of this writing, it was kind of up to 2015 when this album, if I'm correct, is like wrapping up in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I recorded in 2015, and then I guess we had probably had like 6 months of developing the plan of what we were going to do with it and shooting the cover. And we were like 2 weeks away from releasing the first single, I think. We were really close. And Warner got a new CEO and they kind of cleaned house. My label president wound up leaving and moving over to Amazon Music, and they fired like a lot of the people that were on my personal team. And I had a great team. Like the way he built my team was, I made kind of this like weird takeover video, because most of the label didn't even know that they had signed me until after my record was done. He didn't want anyone tampering with my vision. So it was really just me and him until after my record was finished. And then I made a video where I was like taking over their meeting, and anyone that came into his office to be like, who is that? Like, what is that? That's so cool. That's who he hired. So I had like a really passionate team that like was clearly like moved by what I was doing. And it was just when the regime change happened and they got rid of my people, and the new people were kind of like, we want to take the label more like hip hop and bubblegum pop direction. Like, basically you're going to have to change what you're doing. And I was just like, this isn't like, I signed to him. I didn't sign to the label. Like, that wasn't, I wanted him. Like he was actually signing me to Capitol before Warner. And in the last draft of our contract there, he was like, don't sign it, I'm leaving. And he went to Warner, but he couldn't sign me for a year because of a non-compete clause. So I waited for him for a year and I just developed myself behind the scenes. And the day that the non-compete clause was up, he signed me to Warner.
Wow.
So I was signing to the person, not the entity. And my team. And so when that was gone, it was just like, I'm not going to get like just assigned to someone random that like doesn't even give a shit about my project and like wants to basically change it. So he and my dad and everybody like got me out of my deal, and I took ownership of everything that I had made and left. And so that was just, you know, a few weeks before release. And then shortly after that, I had lost my voice and from a weird allergic reaction and was silent for 75 days. I couldn't talk, whisper mouth words, like nothing. And so it was just like being on top of the world with like this project that I loved so much and having like the dream record deal and like everything just going so well. And then, you know, going from that to losing my deal and not knowing if I would sing like myself ever again. And just like, it was just like a lot of hits from Plane Crash to like those things. It was just like, bam, bam, bam. And that's why I say resilience is definitely the number one trait you must have if you wish to be in this business, yeah. Or I think any business at all. But those are the things that kept developing the project, like not shying away from them, but like leaning into them harder and like spending that time that I was silent and obviously incredibly depressed from losing my deal, just like learning more about myself and developing my artistic side more in other areas. Like when I couldn't sing, I was a lot more focused on learning more about the visual side of things. And even I think honestly, like if I can tell you, being on the label, I think more than anything trained me to know how to do a lot of jobs that now I do for myself. Like I got to see it function at the highest level and see where I think a lot of companies like waste money or could save money or like put the budget in the wrong places. And just doing all that stuff, like I, not that it's a waste, but like it can be done DIY, and that's why I do everything DIY now. But I got to experience the photo shoots and just everything at that high level, and so I was able to be like, oh, I can replicate that. Like I don't need all that, I don't need all of this, I can do it myself. And just kill myself like I have been this week.
So say, yeah, no big deal. I'll just work 7 a.m. to midnight every day through the weekends.
Exactly. But people played a really important role, I think, more than anything in training me to be what I am now.
Yeah, the first thing that popped in my head when you were saying all that, I was like, oh, you really got boot camp for leading up to this. Really become your own production house, which is like it is fascinating. How did that experience inform how you rebuilt your team? Or did you go with the same folks that you'd been working with? Or what did that look like?
No, I was with a manager at the time that definitely was not a good fit for me and did not understand me and was absent a lot. And after I lost my deal, I kind of thought, oh, this project is done. You basically just need to take it to another label. It's like ready to market. Like, wouldn't everybody jump on that? And that was not the case at all. And I found that he was not being very truthful about where he was pitching me. He just wasn't, I don't think, trying very hard, because I think the album to him felt weird. Like, I don't think he expected me to do something that was so like artistically left of center. And then I think he didn't get it and didn't know what to do with it. And I don't think wanted to pitch it as hard as he should have. And just kind of dropped the ball really hard. So I left him and then kind of had the same thing where I was like, oh, like I have this great product. Like I should be able to just find a team. And it doesn't fucking work that way when you're emailing people from your Gmail, like, hey, check out my music. And like, nobody reads cold emails. And so a good couple of years, I think, to feel like I was, I mean, obviously a lot of years, 13 years that, you know, it took me to get this out, and I didn't want to not do it justice. And I was worried that if I released it independently without the marketing budget it deserved, that nobody was going to hear it. And like, what the hell am I doing? So I basically spent a lot of years meeting people and networking and just developing myself and making the visuals. And you know, I had just decided right before COVID hit that I was going to start releasing it. And I put out the first single. And the original vision for this album until recently was to put it out as a song and video every month for 13 months. And it was going to roll out as singles and play the visual album, because it was important to me that people listen to it as an album and they digested the entire story. So I was like, if I release it in order, I'm kind of in a way like making people watch it the way I want them to watch it. But with so many delays, like COVID happened and we had just started touring, and then I was like, well, I'm not going to release this without being able to play shows. Like that's part of our, you know, best thing. And without having marketing money, like how am I going to get people to hear it? And then an investor came into my life during COVID, and we worked for 9 months on a deal. And it was kind of another like dream situation that was like, you build the team, you build everything, like I'll just help you with the budget. And that fell apart after 9 months. And it was just, this project's been through a lot of like really close calls and heartbreaks. And then after COVID, like, you know, let up and everyone opened everything again, we spent some time just being like, okay, we ought to release this ourselves. Like, I can't keep holding on to this. And started, you know, dripping out the singles again. And then kind of hit a place where I was like, I need to drop this as a collection. I need to like get this out, do it its justice the best I can, and move on to the new music I've been writing, because there's a lot of new music, and like I, you know, can't just keep holding on to this hoping for like the dream situation. And I'm ecstatic that it's come out this way. And with the response, like, I mean, I don't have a huge marketing budget, and I'm just so happy people have found it and that they're loving it as much as they are. So then, and for people like you that are helping me spread the word to more people that hopefully love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a captivating project in so many ways, in seeing the visuals that like clicked. So obviously hearing your approach, it's really cool to hear, because I'm like, oh, this makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. Video. So my first exposure was actually just Caitlin emailing me over your stuff. And so getting to just dive in, I just went straight to like Instagram. I was like, oh, this clicks. Also, we're kind of matching with the purple theme, which is awesome. So I feel like looking out here. But I guess actually that was something I was curious about, how that came to fruition, like the purple cult. And I guess, is that like a, hey, in the long run, is purple like got a deep meaning, or is it like gonna be like a project basis, like, hey, we're rolling, you know, with the eras here?
It's not an era, it's me. As you can probably gather by now, every single thing has really deep meaning and like 20 meanings. That's just how I am. So purple has like always, since I was a kid, been a color that I surround myself with. Like my childhood bedroom was like purple walls, purple shag carpet, purple bed, like everything was purple. But I never would say like, oh, it's my favorite color. It was just a color I always was drawn to and surrounded myself with. And I've had purple hair now for 16 years. So when I started researching purple and like the color theory behind it and the energetic properties of purple, it fits so well with who I am as a person. And also like my name means resurrection, fame, and nobility. Those are my three names. And purple is the color of the resurrection and a color of nobility. And it is the color of transformation, uniqueness, boldness, authenticity, creativity, magic. Like all of the words and feelings that purple is associated with were absolutely like the center of what I wanted my brand to make people feel and what I wanted to personally like cultivate in my life. And purple to me, like when I surround myself with it, it almost feels like an armor against the rest of the world. That's like, it's creativity and magic, and in a world that I don't think always supports creativity and magic. And so I think it's kind of calling that energy into my life, no matter what situations I'm in or what I'm around. And then it just kind of became, I don't know, I just really went there. And right. Like everything from my bed to my studio, it's all purple. And I think, you know, even in my merch and like the feelings that I wanted people to have when they're around my music or wearing a piece of merch or something, like it feels to me like a little bit of a creative armor I can give everybody else. So my mission and like motto for my whole project is turning the mundane into the extraordinary. And I think that that's like purple distilled into a sentence.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's also the only color that doesn't really sit on the spectrum or have its own spectrum in a way. Like it's purple. I mean, it's red and blue, and it's the fieriness of red and like the passion of red and the calming side of blue, which I think is absolutely my personality in a nutshell. I'm like watery, emotional Pisces with like the crazy workaholic passion. So I don't know, there's a million reasons why purple is the color and why it always will be, and why I think certain artists have always been drawn to it, like Prince and like people that were very multifaceted creatives that just loved creativity for the sake of creativity. It's kind of in royalty, it showed up because it was like the most rare color that they could find because it was only made from certain beetles that they would crush and shells and stuff. So I think it's, I don't know, I just find everything about it to be very beautiful.
Definitely. That was awesome. You talk about not being like a words first person, but that really leads me, because clearly you're like a student of the game too, you know, like that's what was so cool to hear about, is you really understand the history and the nuance of everything that you're touching. And I'm curious how that played into the album title then, because it's all very orchestrated and tied in. So how did you land on that?
Yeah, the album title, La Petite Mort, means the brief loss of consciousness, the little death, and orgasm. And I actually wound up first writing that phrase into Cigarettes and Gasoline in the Bridge. And that song actually was not on the album when I was with Warner. That was the last song I put on the album. It didn't make the album. And the album just always didn't feel complete to me without it. And so I ended up putting it first as like the prologue after I left the album. And I was like, I named this album from a lyric in that bridge. Like it needs to be on there. But I kind of, I named it that because the whole album is kind of about my dark night of the soul and my personal death of everything that I was before the plane crash experience, and my name meaning resurrection. I think my parents like destined me for a life of continuous deaths and resurrections with how many traumatic and crazy things that I go through and kind of pull myself out from. So I wanted this album to really show like that your dark times are not like an end. It's kind of like a rebirth and like all the little deaths that we go through and the orgasm side of things, like showing how death can be like a springboard to positivity and pleasure and things that like get you deeper into yourself. So it explores all of those themes, and it just felt like the perfect title. And it being French just felt like it fit really well with the classical nature of the project. And yeah, I love it. It's funny because I don't consider myself a words person, but I'm starting to feel less like that. I think I'm too complicated for my own good sometimes, and other people have made me feel like I'm not a words person, but it's something that I have had to really like break those blocks in myself. Like even when I wanted to name my community the Purple Cult, like I had so much pushback from people in my life, or like marketing people being like, no, like cult's a bad word, and like, you know. And for me, I was like, no, it's the right word, because a cult is something where it's a group of people who said like basically fully subscribe to dedicating their lives to a certain ideal or person or ideal. And to me, I was like, what better thing to dedicate your entire existence to than the meanings of the word purple? Like everyone should be living fully in service to their creativity and their magic and their ability to transform and be unique and be brave and bold. And like, so I was like, fuck that. Like, it is cult. It is dark. It goes with the entire theme of everything that I am. And if people don't like the word cult, they probably won't like me either. So I think we're good. Good.
Could be kind of an ominous. If you don't like the cult, we're coming for you.
And especially with the new music that I'm working on now, is it's definitely bolder in the things it talks about. And it's music that comes from more of like, I think the more empowerment healed place that I went through in the past year. I wrote all this music in the past year after I, you know, broke off my engagement, and after I like, you know, came to terms with putting this album out and just like kind of springboarding from stuff that was weighing on me into like full on accepting my power as an artist and a person. And so a lot of the new music is very like empowerment based, and the topics can get a little blasphemous at times. So again, if people don't like the word cult, they're probably not gonna like the new music. No.
Hey, they've been fairly warned.
Fairly warned.
That's so cool. And that's actually something that's so fascinating to me too, is like you have this album that's rolling out that's been such a big part of your life, and have had so much time to think about every aspect of it. Your album dropped at the time of this interview last week, and you're already full blown in like 12 plus hour days on the next project. So was this for you an opportunity to kind of lay it to rest and go, great, this project that's been basically 10 years in development is out. Now I can sprint, to your point, the more recent stuff, springboard into the new and capture it while it's raw? Or what was the motivation to just dive head first, you know, amid the album rollout into this?
So many things, so many reasons.
Yeah.
Because I'm still not 100% done with album one. I am filming, well, I'm editing the next three music videos that will release in the next couple of weeks. And then I'm about to film the last four for the series in September. So I still have some things to finish for album one. So I'm not 100% out of the woods. Mm-hmm. But I didn't write for a really long time, like years. I didn't write a song because it just felt like I was kind of writing music to add to a hard drive of hundreds of songs that, like, I don't really write things that I don't love. Like, I don't really finish a song unless it's like something I really love. So I was just like making music that I was just like, nobody's ever going to hear this. And that, like, I don't know, that just didn't really do it for me. So that's why I started working so hard on the visual element of the project. And then I guess this past year, when I became a lot more of a band than just a solo artist. I mean, my drummer has been with me for 5 years, and but we really just started being like, okay, what do we sound like as a band? Because they weren't a part of writing the first music. Mm-hmm. And my experience playing a lot of shows and stuff now, and seeing like which songs really get people going, and like what really translates live. And like, I love playing shows. And so we started being like, okay, let's like dip our toe back in writing. But there was part of me that was like so scared to write, because I had this thing that like I consider to be a real masterpiece that I spent a lot of my life on. And then it's like, I'm not going to have the sophomore album slump. Like, what am I going to make next? I could do, like, who am I now? Like, this project is like everything I've poured myself into. And so we kind of started out with like very low pressure, just like, what do we write like as a band? And like, let's just write songs for the sake of writing songs. And every song we wrote was just like a banger. And we were like, oh, like, and it was like very much like just one session where I was just like, I got this. Like, what am I concerned about? Like, I am music. Like, I can do this. There's no like, you know, fear about now not, you know, being able to do it. But I mean, that's a lot of questions that people ask me, like when I'm pitching for anything, they're like, oh, you made this so long ago. Like, do you think the next stuff you make will be great? And I'm just like, why wouldn't it be? Like, if I made that when I was 18, what do you think I'm going to make now? Now that I'm like so much more knowledgeable. And so a lot of it was kind of validating to me that I could write really great music. And so we wrote a bunch of songs, not that many though, comparatively, like probably like 10. And yeah, I was like, seven of these have to come out. Like, we have to finish them. And so we didn't want to have really like a break, because it's been nothing but breaks for years. And like, I didn't want to get into this kind of rhythm where I'm creating, where I'm marketing and playing shows and promoting something that was me years ago. Like, I didn't want to get into some kind of like thing where I'm always creating years ahead. And then when I'm, you know, it's time to talk about it and push it, it's not me anymore. Like, not that any of this isn't me anymore. I'm, like I said, I'm grateful I'm able to release it in the first project now and be able to talk about it more. But that person that made that album is not me anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to be able to speed up the timeline a bit and catch up to myself. And so my drummer and I sat down and made a release schedule for the new music. And we were just like, we also have the next concept album that we're working on that will be next summer. So we were like, okay, in order to release as much music as we want to release, like we're very prolific writers, like we can get on a schedule to where it's, you know, coming out quicker. So this was really our group effort to be like, no breaks, like we write enough great music and we can do this if we just like commit ourselves. And so we set the release schedule before we had anything even close to done. And
wow, that's awesome.
We already know when the first single's coming out of this new project, and it is this year. Two will be out before the end of the year. So we just set the date and all the dates through next summer. And we're like, okay, this new music, if we can finish all this new music by the end of the year, it will basically carry us to next summer, so we can spend the next 6 months focusing on writing this concept album that we're working on. And we're kind of caught up to ourselves. I was stressed about putting it in the middle of album release time because it's definitely taken me away from being able to like edit as much content as I should be and like working on certain things. But it's also been so good for my mental health and like the best possible thing I could have done to put recording a week after the album release, because when you release something you've been working on for 13 years, there's a bit of like, holy fuck, this has been my identity for this like long period of time. And I didn't want to like basically like unload the gun and then just feel like, oh my God, like what am I gonna do? Like I have no bullets in the chamber. Like I just spent all this time on this and like now I have nothing. Yeah. And so being able to release it already, you know, be finishing the videos and then get to hear what the next phase of music is, I have nothing but like forward momentum, feeling and excitement to like keep moving. Like there's no hesitation of like, oh, should I have released it independently? Should I have done it this way? Like, is it doing well? And I'm like so busy, I don't even check my fucking numbers. And yeah, it is exactly what I needed.
Yeah.
Because being able to hear, like, I love these new songs so much, and being able to hear them in the studio, like, I'm like, oh, this is a huge level up from album one. Like, this is through the ceiling. So I feel so good. Like, I couldn't have stacked all this to be at better timing. I'm just really tired.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome though. It's obviously been such a up and down journey. So it's great that it's ending on this like upward like launch point.
Exactly.
After all these years is very cool.
No more fucking roadblocks. Like I will smash them. I'm just like, I cannot have any more. Like it's not, I refuse. We're just gonna keep going. I think a lot of that too has just been checking myself where I stop myself, because I think I've had so much fear that just like doing it independently and releasing things that I spend so much time on and worrying that nobody's going to find it and then I'm putting it into the void. Like I have such a like crippling fear of failure, I think, in this, that it has made me stop myself more than I care to ever know or see. And I just, I'm kind of like, making this new music is just very much to me like, if I just set the intention and the dates, like it'll work. It'll just work. I just keep going. Just keep going.
Yep.
I can't control anything other than just keep going. So just keep going.
Yeah. So I'm so excited to get to hear that, because the album's incredible. And
what's your favorite song?
So I've been going back and forth between Lion's Den and London. Nice. Are the two that I've been listening to the most. How about you? Like, now that you've sat with them for so long, I'm sure it changes all the time, but at this moment, what is your favorite?
It does change a lot. I have different favorites for different things. I think, like, I have a very special relationship with Crimson and Violet, because that's the only song on the record that I wrote 100% of, no co-writers. And I don't really know, like, what happened for me that day, but lyrically, I'm the most proud of that song. It's very me in its lyrics, to where there's a lot of hidden meanings in there, and it's a really like poetic and intricate lyric. And I don't often get like just bursts where I write a lyric top to the bottom. And so I just like, that one was like a special flow to me. But listening to the album, this week. I think I'm If and When is like a song that I have had fun rediscovering because it's not one that we play live much currently. Mm-hmm. Actually, we've never played it. I used to play it live on piano a lot, but we have never put it in our show because we were saving some of the last songs on the record to like be new in the show once the album came out. Mm-hmm. And so I hadn't listened to the song in a really long time. And it's one of my favorite productions. Like when you strip out the vocals, there's so much, so many layers of like ear candy in that song. So that's the one I've been having the most fun listening to again. And my favorite song to play live, I think, is In the Dark or Lion's Den. Those are my two favorites currently to play live. But our new music is definitely going heavier because of that. Mm. I love playing those songs so much and like the energy and like the crowd response that I definitely am taking the new music heavier.
I'm excited. That's very cool. I think, or Lion's Den is just so anthemic, which I think that would be incredible to see live. So of it would, but yeah, I love to hear that. I could see why that would be like a crowd pleaser for sure.
I actually like opening the show with that one because think it's a great, like, because at a lot of our shows, like people don't know who we are. And I think it's like a great, just punch you in the face right out the get go. And I think I see people buy into me quicker when I open with that one. Cause I'm like, here, I'm going to give you a lot of crazy, a lot of rock and some operatic vocals. And that's just kind of like a summary of who I am as an artist, like in one song.
And that one just builds so fast too. I imagine mm-hmm. that's such a great opener, starting so stripped and just amping up.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
I used to open a show with Crash Landing because I was like, what's the first song on the record? It's the like beginning of the story, but I think it's too slow to open. So we actually don't really play that one much live anymore.
Oh, interesting. Wow. So it's interesting to hear you talk about it because it sounds so much has changed, not just on the record front, but literally the presentation mm-hmm. on the stage.
Oh yeah. So much has changed in so many areas. Like, but I think living with an album this long, like people ask me a lot, like, do you still like the songs? Do you still like to perform the songs? I mean, you had them for so long or you wrote them so long ago. And I absolutely do. And they, to me, have like changed meaning and like shifted and favorites shift. But like, there's no part of me that like doesn't enjoy all of them. But I just present them differently now that I see people like react to them in certain ways. And I'm like, oh, this belongs more here. Like, yeah, gotta work with it. It's the album is like a living, breathing being, so you have to like work with it. I think this album has felt like my awkward like child that's been in my womb for 13 years and it's like big and like doesn't know how to walk, and it's just like, okay, like releasing it and birthing it is like so painful, but so like, oh, I feel like I just have like an energetic block that is kind of like got out of my body and it's like into the world now. And I honestly think that's why it's been doing so well for an independent release. It's like I'm not gripping it at all. I'm just like, go on, go walk, go be free.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. So one thing I like to do is I have like this kind of rapid fire section, but I almost want to just kind of dive in and just have one. Well, no, we'll do the whole thing. Lean into pulling influences so much from these folks, but I know that they obviously have been top of mind. And then we'll close actually with one about color.
Okay.
Just go into like these greats that have, I guess, embodied that color purple. If you had to choose one, you're going David Bowie or Queen.
And this is supposed to be rapid fire? Oh my God.
Yeah, that's the tough part.
Queen.
Pat Benatar or Billy Idol?
Billy Idol.
Kate Bush or Bjork?
Kate Bush.
Radiohead or Nine Inch Nails?
Radiohead.
With your love for the color purple, the parts that make it up, you've had to choose one, red or blue?
Blue. Red. Red.
Fair. Right on. This has been so awesome. Before we tell people where to go get everything, I am just curious, and you've covered a lot of this, but like stepping back, I guess, ultimately, like, why do you make music?
Because I have to. It's just who I am. Like, it's literally just, it's the thing that drives my entire life force. It's it's, I think, the most brutal, heartbreaking, terrible at times career you could possibly get yourself into. But if I was doing anything else, my life would be not worth anything to me. So I think it's, I think to do the kind of stuff that I do, you have to have some level of delusion about it. And like, just sheer, I have to do this, because it's just, that maybe isn't the sexiest answer, but it's like, it's the truth. It's just everything. It's everything I think about, and I'm obsessed with it. It's at times probably a sick obsession that like is unhealthy for me and makes me push myself way past physical and mental limits that anyone should. I would trade any relationship in my life for music. I would trade anything for this career. And I think on like a more positive spectrum of it, I think when I get to see how something I poured myself into and felt like I had to make, like it impacts somebody in a positive way, or like makes somebody feel more seen or like less alone in the world, it gives purpose to why I feel like I have to kill myself for this job. So I think it's like, it's two-sided, and like, I do it because like, I can't not do it, but seeing why I do it and the impact of why I do it comes from people experiencing it, which I think I denied myself a long time by holding this project for so long. And it was a lot more of that one-sided like masochism for this fucking project. And now that it's out and getting to get people's messages and people's response to it, it feels like it's a lot more of a two-way relationship energetically with music and the way that it's supposed to be. So that's why I do it.
I love that. And you read my mind, which was going to be, you know, kind of what you hope people get out of it. I guess if you had the chance to sit down with your 16-year-old self today, what advice are you giving her?
The best advice I think I would give my 16-year-old self is the advice my dad has always given me before any meeting that I ever went into, which is believe in yourself and others will too. And I also would say to her that she is the magic, not the people that she thinks she needs. Mm. Because I think that's what made me stop myself a lot, was feeling like I needed a million people. I needed marketing. I needed this. I needed this. And it's hard to trust yourself that much, but I think when you can know that you are the magic that drives your whole operation, and that when you act from that place, the right people show up, because it's very true. That is the best advice. Also to continue all the methods of therapy and healing that, I would say don't do anything differently though. There's nothing at all that I would tell myself to do differently, because I think all the bad choices I've made have gotten me to this moment. And yeah, I would just give her a hug and be like, hang in there. It's about to get real fucking rough.
Yeah.
It's about to get rough a million times. But I've gotten to the point where I call her the trauma fairy. I actually welcome the really dark times in life, because every single one has like, again, brought me to a place of greater artistry and understanding of myself and the world. So I kind of, again, masochist for this career.
In the best of ways and in the most positive, like you said, it's an amazing project. I can't wait to hear what's next. Yeah. And I guess most importantly here, where can people follow along, find the record, stay tuned for all the new stuff?
Yeah, I mean, the record is on all the streaming platforms. If you want to digest the visual side of it that I am intended to go along with it, YouTube is a great place to go, because there's going to be 8 more videos that will be dropping in the next couple of months.
Just casually more videos than most artists put out in their career in the next couple of months. No big deal.
I actually love that you focused so much on the music in this podcast, because I feel like most of the time people ask me more about how I pull off the visuals by myself than the music. And I rarely get to talk about the music as much. So that was really fun and different for me.
I'm so glad. Yeah, it was one thing where I feel like we could do a whole nother podcast on the visuals. But
you
I
could.
Think, yeah. So and I'm sure you've got plenty on the docket that you'll be pushing. But I was thrilled to be able to, because I think one thing that just resonated right off the bat was when you were talking about your visual approach to the music itself. I think for me, that was just, oh, this is something we've got to dive into. So really appreciate you being open and diving into all that, because I thought it was super cool. And obviously so much amazing stuff. And yeah, that YouTube channel is going to be popping.
Yes, be on that YouTube channel. And Instagram is my favorite personal platform. I'm really trying to TikTok though. So join me over there and encourage the TikTok as well. Let's see, where else can you find me? I have a private community on Facebook. That's the Purple Cult. And in there, my hope is to build an awesome community of creative people that can support each other in their work. And also they get early access to things from me. I really do my best to be in there talking and doing stuff. So that's a fun place too. So those are all the places and live shows. We don't have a ton of them coming up right now because of all the other things that I'm focused on. It's not traveling is not super easy, but we are playing a festival in Saxbaha, North Carolina in September called Soil and Sky Fest. That's going to be really fun. And we're playing in Raleigh the night before on the 22nd of September. And those are the only shows currently booked right now, probably through the end of the year. I don't know. We may have a couple pop up, but next year, my hope's to be touring a lot more and playing a lot more shows. So keep your eyes on the socials.
Awesome. Will do. And thank you again so much for doing this, especially amid the craziness. So this was awesome.
Oh, thank you for having me. So much fun. You're awesome. My first podcast for the album, my first interview at all about the album. So
hey, let's go. And I'm truly honored. So thank you again so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Cheers. Shouts out to Anastasia for being on Made for Music. Her album La Petite Mort is out now on all major streaming platforms, iTunes, all that good stuff. Be sure to follow her at Anastasia Elliott on Instagram and TikTok, like her Facebook page, and of course, go subscribe to her on YouTube, as she has approximately 6,000 music videos on the way. And if you dig what you hear on the podcast, brought to you by Stitch Records, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. Truly appreciate that extra effort, and I'll see you next time.